A Hero's Journey is a podcast filled with spoilers. We recommend reading the book each week before you listen, but we trust you to make your own decision.
Hi, and welcome to A Hero's Journey, a literary podcast. I'm your host and judge, Jack, and I'm here with my chosen custodians.
This is Alex.
And I'm Zach.
Each week, we look at a different book through Joseph Campbell's monomyth.
This week, we're taking a look at Lord of Chaos, which is a story within the Wheel of Time series. Since last week, we decided to talk about Egwene. We're going to be talking about characters within the story that are not Egwene. And next week, we'll be talking about Rand. So we're also going to be leaving Rand out of this particular episode. It might be a short one, but we think there was definitely some points of view and items that were hit along the hero's journey that we didn't get to talk to with these other two characters that had a little more screen time, as it were. So I'm starting off here, and I'd like to talk about the introduction of what I always said was Oliver, but apparently is only Olver.
It's so weird.
Yes, agreed.
But I very well may just call him Oliver for the rest of the time. But the introduction of Oliver, he's a young boy, right? So he doesn't get his own point of views and all that. But I think as far as he is concerned in his own life's journey, Matt is very much the mentor for him. Now, you could probably apply it to all of Matt's band based on the influences that we see them putting upon the child. But Matt is definitely the main one. And I like to point to his future, not quite seduction or womanizing, isn't, but his flirtatious nature with women certainly gets passed down from Matt, although Matt always seems to wonder where it came from.
Yeah, that's one of the funniest things for me is Matt constantly wondering where Oliver is learning this bad behavior, and then not thinking about the band, just not even like not thinking about himself, but not thinking about the band.
He realizes a little bit later.
Yeah.
At most, it's minimal.
Very minimal. He's mostly worried that the girls are going to blame the band next book.
Yeah.
Do you think that this represents anything on the road of on the hero's journey for Matt, possibly like a road of trials or any other step?
I think there's a certain amount of responsibility that comes with it that Matt hasn't really seen in his life. Like, he's had these responsibilities to his friends and his family, but nothing that he has sort of fully taken on his own as a parental figure. I don't know if it really it could be a trial, but it feels, compared to some of the other trials that he faces, like fighting ancient evils and dealing with Aes Sedai and all that, it seems very mundane.
So this is not the same as Matt's trial, where he fights Culloden or goes through and talks to the Aethelin or Aethelin, right? But
no, it's humanizing, but it's not really a part of his hero's journey, I don't think, for Matt in particular. But I think for Oliver, we can all agree that without Matt, he certainly wouldn't be where he was today, and who knows where he would be.
Probably dead. Or as orphans typically end up without guardians.
Don't know what you're talking about. Everything ends up happily for orphans whose names start with O.
Can we use the proper term of foundling? I don't know where this orphan talk came from, but we only deal with the term foundling. That's what they used to call them in England, and I think it's better than orphan. All right, so next, we're moving to something that I think is actually on Matt's journey. I think it's small journey, not big journey, book-specific journey. It's his trial to go retrieve the girls. He gets tasked to go rescue them, as it were. and it's, a varying success. Rand sends Matt and the band after Egwene to Saladar. And he gives him an order to go to bring back Elaine so that she can take the lion and the sun thrones, as well as to bring along Egwene and Nynaeve. if they want to come, but certainly Elaine is going to want to come and needs to come. He gets there and finds that everything's not as he thought the situation was going to be, and so gets his task extended and shifted, and we talked a little bit about that in the last episode. And so he leaves with Nynaeve and Elaine for, I don't know quite how to pronounce it. I never have. Abu Dhar.
I've been saying Abu Dhari in my head, but that's not correct.
I am almost confident that's not correct, but Abu Dhar. And and he goes with them, leaving most of the band behind. And so he's kind of gets his trials shifted. He thinks he's doing one task and has to do another. But I think this is part of intricately tied with his being
a tavern boy.
Yeah. So I think that's really interesting. I think this might be one of the trials that Matt quote fails at. Like Rand gives him this specific task and Matt just doesn't accomplish it, at least in this book up to where we are now. Matt has not been able to accomplish this task. So I personally really like that as a road of trial for him. It's something that he needs to work on, right? His relationship with those girls specifically and his relationship to everyone as a hero. So I like that as a road of trial.
I definitely agree with the assessment that if this fits anywhere, it's a little road of trials rather than something that's a big grand trial on Matt's journey. I do like the fact that it ties in to Matt's greater struggle of figuring out his place in Rand's world. And it does feed a lot into Matt's ongoing character growth in both somehow being Matt the Rake and Matt the Lord and General. So it definitely fits in this book. I wish Matt had more trials this book. He kind of only does one major thing, which is get here and do this.
Yeah, moving on, I want to talk a little bit about Elaine and Nynaeve here. They both get raised to Aes Sedai or essentially so by Egwene.
Aes Sedai in name only!
For they haven't touched the rod of truth binding or whatever the hell it's called.
Oath rod.
Yeah, the oath rod.
God, Zach.
The thing you swear the three oaths on.
Yeah. Well, they haven't done that yet, but besides that, they're Aes Sedai. And I want Egwene to be the higher power here. And I try to think about this in a sort of, I see it in two ways. It's definitely the higher power for the book. I haven't quite decided in their, you know, entire series arc if this quite gets there. You could try to argue earlier with Moraine, but even that's a little stretch. So the primary, I think, opposition to it, and something you guys might pick up on, and you ruminated on it long enough, is that Egwene is still very much in many aspects their confidant and friend and compatriot. So it's very odd that she now holds this position so much above them and has the ability to do these things. So I think it's definitely a huge gift to them, a bit of a curse because of the things being spoke about them behind their backs. But
they are only treated as... Right, there were previously the two, and I'm blanking on their names. Yeah. Accepted race is something more than accepted, and although Egwene raises all of them to Aes Sedai, they're still treated as junior.
And I think we can look to Egwene's own explanation of why she did this to see that it doesn't really fit the higher power. She's saying she did it so she could mask herself, putting them on the same level as her. Makes people less scrutinous of her as Amyrlin.
So that is what she says, and I know you're both biased by foreknowledge, but when I read that, I actually read that as her post justifying her actions.
Oh, I mean, it 100% is that too. But I think there is some truth also in what she's saying there.
It definitely works that way in function.
Yeah. So I really can't see Egwene as a higher power for them because they're so on the same level. Even in this, the reason Egwene is doing it is to say that she's on the same level as them. They're on the same level as her.
I do know we don't often discuss it, but just because it also came up in my mind at this point, did anyone else read this particularly, even on first read or reread, as sort of a plot device? Because the worry around the girls having pretended to be Aes Sedai for so long was growing stale, and they do function better narratively as people with their own agency.
Yeah, I think it could be. So one of the criticisms of this book or this series is that the three boys are Tavirin, and then we have all of these strong female characters like Egwene, Elaine, Nynaeve, and they're never said to be Tavirin. And it would make sense, like Tavirin, if Matt had, for example, been one of these girls, and his Tavirin nature would have just compelled Egwene to raise them to Aes Sedai for plot reasons, that would be acceptable. But in this case, it is just clearly.
Do we ever meet any female Tavirin?
No.
Spoilers again.
No, it's possible. It's stated.
I don't think that exists.
No, I think it was stated to be possible, but there just aren't any in this book.
They're meant to be, despite the fact that the ability to see them is meant to be common among the Aes Sedai compared to other talents, they're meant to be quite relatively rare. Correct? I'm not misremembering.
Yeah, before these three had they have thousands of lives that have existed in the past, and while that's explicitly stated that some of them overlap, the majority of them probably don't. There's especially one, I think, where Matt talks about where he fought against the original dragon. Well,
again, I know you guys know more than me, but Matt's memories, I have a hard time, they don't come across as his own past lives, as more general past lives. I know that.
That is incorrect.
That is incorrect.
They're all his own past lives.
Yeah, and I even think at this point you're supposed to realize that.
Yeah.
Matt actively states against that.
Because he doesn't want them to be his own.
Well, no, but I swear he had two sets of memories that were at roughly the same time period.
They're definitely his own life.
They're his own lives. It's not a question. He asks, the way he phrased the question is to fill the holes in his memories, right? With his memories. I'm 100% certain that there are his own memories. There can be female Tavirin. I just looked it up. There's one historical one, Mabriam in Shireed, who is mentioned in some book. I'm just looking on the Watt fandom wiki.
Apparently, it's still up for debate that the most common theory is that they're his own past lives.
It's because they are his own past lives. That was easy.
Apparently still up for debate as of 2010.
Well, 2010 was a good chunky 12 years ago. All right, so I think we got
what we needed. But apparently, by the way, I fall in the category of, does Matt have memories of being two people at once? This is a common misconception based on a sequence of memories described in this book in this chapter. They're not actually at the same time. So I'm not crazy for thinking that.
No, you're just crazy.
Thanks, Zach. Love you.
No problem.
Anyway, back to our loving podcast.
So finally, one of my last points here, I want to talk about Perrin. I think there's a big effort within Perrin. Yeah, we see so little of him in this story.
Is that Payil's husband?
I think so.
He seems like a nice man.
Don't you do that to the arguably third most important character in this book or in this series.
I'm sorry, Alex, do you hear Emma's boyfriend talking to us? Is that what's going on right now?
How dare you?
Hi, Emma, when you get to this episode.
How dare I date a doctor and expect her to be more important than me? I told you that we went to a place on Doctor's Day and we told them it was Doctor's Day and they gave me the Doctor's Day cake.
That's amazing. I hope she murdered them.
Oh, it was super funny. She was laughing about it. It's actually one of my better photos. So for Perrin, I think that in this story, he has a strong desire to ignore his kind of destiny-shaping nature and to ignore the call that Rand has on him. But he doesn't get to do that. Like, his temptation is to just stay back in the Two Rivers and continue doing what he's been doing and help and continue to kind of be the lord of the Two Rivers. But he doesn't get that opportunity because Rand pulls him back in. And so I think the temptation is to do that, just that. But I think he, A, has too much of a fondness for his good, maybe best friend and childhood friend. And there's just the nature of the physical, it almost seems like a physical, not necessarily pain, but you know when you guys forget, so I always imagine it like when you forget something and it really bugs you.
Yeah, it's like itching at the back of your head all day. Yeah, and you like, can't
What was that person's name or what was that word I was trying to think of? You just can't let it go to the point that you can't think of anything else.
And you get like such relief when you figure it out finally.
Oh my god, later. I can't believe I couldn't think of that word.
No, I think that's really good. The thing I see though is Perrin has already refused this temptation, leaving the Two Rivers, which we don't get to see, right? We just see him kind of like pop up here. So exactly what you're saying. But the temptation is to stay in the Two Rivers, stay with Fael, stay with his family and in his place, accepting his new place as Lord. But exactly like you said, the Tavira nature just kind of drags him away. And I don't think Perrin would have refused this anyway if he knew that he needed to be close to Rand. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Perrin is kind of the opposite of Matt in that way, where Matt is there and constantly aware that he can't escape versus Perrin got to leave, but Perrin was kind of always aware that he was coming back if he didn't die.
Yeah. Perrin is dedicated to duty. Like, duty is all he cares about and Matt doesn't. That's the reason he went to the Two Rivers in the first place.
Well, that kind of wraps up my thoughts here on our tertiary cast, so to say. What about you, Jack? What did you find?
So I have a few, some overlapping characters, obviously, but thankfully no overlapping points. I also have a meeting with the mentor. We don't get that point, but I think it's very fun to watch Nynaeve reject her series of mentors that are all dedicated to breaking her of her wilder crutch. But it's block. Thank you. I was blanking on the word. I was blocked. It was blocked from my memory. But as Nynaeve and Elaine come forward with their many wonderful discoveries that they've secretly acquired through their capture of Mogedion, all of the sisters in Saladar become obsessed with getting Nynaeve to access her true potential and get past her block. And so we get a series of vignettes that are all quite fun, some of them comical, some of them character related, of different Aes Sedai trying to help Nynaeve as she constantly rejects them. And so this would have been a fun opportunity to get an additional mentor for Nynaeve after Moraine's departure from our story so far. She's coming back, I believe it. We didn't see a body. And she rejects all of them, and Nynaeve, in very Nynaeve fashion, steadfastly refuses any help from anyone, anywhere, and rejects her own character progression. One day she is going to grow up, which is funny to say about the most grown up of our five main characters.
Yeah, I like to think of this as a bunch of people who are doing working interviews for Nynaeve's mentor and just failing miserably. Everyone is like trying their best, but no one gets her. No one gets her enough to help her.
Yeah, I don't think they're trying to help her. I think we have to. That might be a small portion of it, maybe like 10%. I think it's more of a Aes Sedai like puzzles and challenges and she is certainly that. And so it's more of a self-fulfilling sort of desire than it is a desire to actually help somebody. I mean, it might not be true of all of them, but
does channeling inherently make you an asshole, or is that just everyone in this world?
No, you get the power and it just goes to your head.
Ugh. Absolute power corrupts everybody else. Absolutely. That's a Zachary Zockel quote.
I see.
Coming a bit out of left field on the road of trials, she's a character that we haven't spent too much time with before, and I don't think we've talked about her much on the podcast. I don't think we've talked about her much on the pod. Morgaze, we actually get to spend a little bit of time with her. And while last book we didn't talk much about it, she kind of went through her own departure of losing her kingdom and beginning to refind herself. In this book, we kind of step in the middle of her road of trials. We get Morgaze's road of trials, in which she has sold herself a little bit to the Children of the Light, and she's now trying to find a way out of that deal. And we get all of her machinations and movements within her imprisonment with them. And I think that that is a very fun set of trials for a character that we don't spend much time with, but because we're quite attached to Elaine, barring Zach, I'm attached
to Elaine.
Oh yeah, you think Elaine is best girl. You're wrong.
Elaine, best girl.
Absolute worst, but okay.
Min, Avienda, Elaine, but you could swap the last two and I wouldn't notice that much.
Oh no.
I'm not finished yet. Give me a break. Min, best girl. That's the important Elaine, best part. Girl.
Yeah, Min, Avienda, and then like, imagine I'm doing that thing with my hands where I go high, low. Elaine is low. Like,
okay, but where do you put the Aes Sedai that brain raped him? Because she's fourth girl.
Oh my god. Lower? Somehow?
But yeah, in general, one of the many wonderful things about the Wheel of Time's multiple point of views is that we do get to dart in and spend these relatively intense scenes with characters, whether they're good guys or bad guys, that you wouldn't always get. And it does cause some discontinuity in narrative, but as somebody who's this far in and already invested, it's come around from annoying to just so much fun.
Yeah, so I really like, trying to not spoil, I really like where Morgaze's story is going at this point. I think that she's a super interesting character, and the politics with her and the White Cloaks to me is very interesting. Like, I want to see what happens. Having already read and knowing what happens, I won't stop commenting at this point.
The next point that I have sitting one too high on our podcast list. So the next character that I wanted to talk about a little bit was Elaine. I think that she's sort of the embodiment of the Temptress in two forms in this book. She both has the book-based Temptress, where upon Matt's arrival to the rebel Aes Sedai, she, with her developing powers of assessing and making Tarangriel, gets met with her new temptation of forsaking her obligation to Egwene, and just she's focused on getting the Foxhead medallion. And it doesn't come out too much, but I get vague Smeagol's impressions of the "my precious, I need to understand it." So I think that's a fun little in-book temptation that carries over. And then as we see throughout these books, but especially focused on in her conversations with Min and then eventually Avienda, that Elaine is introduced to what I view as likely her large scale temptation, which is sadly fighting over a boy, because she is torn constantly back and forth between liking Min and Avienda and wanting to earn their respect and love them as sisters, and also the fact that they've all got the hots for the same guy and the guy's got the hots for all of them because Rand is a slut.
No, I think he forms deep emotional connections.
That doesn't make him not a hoebag.
Yes, it does.
Hoebagness aside, any thoughts, boys?
I don't know. I don't really know if Elaine is the temptation for me.
Contemplate stabbing Avienda.
Well, that's just like a girl
jokingly.
Kind of thing.
Not jokingly. Avienda hands her a knife and they start talking, and Elaine's internal monologue goes, "And then I put down the knife because I realized I might stab her." That's not joking.
Forgot about that.
I'm not agreeing with it as a concept, but I'm just saying.
Well, it's fine. I see what you're saying now. I think that the Tarangreal is a little bit more of a temptation, but also.
And I get really mad at it. I get more mad at her for the Tarangreal, the necklace, than I do for what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I agree with the fact that her inability to respect Matt's boundaries frustrates me more as a person, but from a long-term temptation, I think you guys have read it, but I think the issue of getting to a place where they can all be Avienda as Cappy as sister wives, not agreeing with that as a personal philosophy. I'm a sucker for monogamy, but
lame.
I think that that is a recurring issue that Elaine might deal with for a while. I can't imagine that accepting that relationship is necessarily easy, and it seems like it's going to cause her some friction in the future. I know that your guys' ability to comment is limited, given that you know the answer to temptations, and that makes my speculativeness difficult to handle. So moving on to the final point that I found is we have what I doubt is the ultimate boon finally for a character, but both in book and as a personal goal, Nynaeve, coming back to her, succeeds in something that she's been told is impossible throughout this entire series so far. And I can't remember whether
it was
this
that?
Book or the book before, but she swore as a goal that she would manage to heal somebody who had been severed or stilled or gentled. It's got three different names just for the purpose of implying that some people are evil in disguise, I guess. I don't know. The Forsaken say severed, and I'm pretty sure some other people have said severed who... Right, didn't Asmodeus say severed? Mm-hmm. Right, like the trick of the language is clearly intentional to tell us who knows what. Regardless of that, Nynaeve accomplishes the impossible, and it's not even due to, right, she's been feeling a bit like an imposter all book, because all of her breakthroughs are mostly things she's taken from Mogedion. And this is something that she accomplishes through her own, well, frustration and experimental use of Weaves of Fire in healing. And so I don't think it's her ultimate boon as a series, but I definitely think it's an incredibly impressive goal and one that she had previously set herself.
Trying not to be spoilery in nature, but I agree that it's an extremely important goal that she set for herself, and it's opening up new forms of magic, and it's something that, you know, scares the Forsaken, which is not something easily done by people who are not Rand, and so I think it opens up in a world that is steeped with pre-existing history, right? That's part of the reason we love the Wheel of Time, is that it's very lived in. It's very cool to see something innovative come from a modern age character.
I agree. Also, it's a gender thing, right? She heals Loghain to full power because she's using Sidar or
She's
Sidan using on Sidar.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why she's less effective for healing Suwon
and
Leanne.
Yes, that is correct.
It's basically stated, but it's all like, oh, I wonder why. It's like, what do you mean you wonder why? You have clinical proof.
I really like this point of the healing for some reason. That's what I was going to actually focus on for all of my points. I think that for four different characters, this one thing, the healing, can represent a different trial for everyone. And I find that super interesting.
It is a fascinating moment.
Yeah. But for Nynaeve, I saw it more as a trial for her. Healing is something she's working at forever. She's looking for new things to heal, new ways to heal, and specifically healing the stilling or gentling or severing, however you want to call it. So I thought more of as part of the road of trials for her to discover new forms of healing.
I get that. I think that might be the difference in scope, right? For somebody who's read all of it, we're very, very mid journey. And so it's a lot easier to classify things as road of trials versus for me, this is the culmination of where we've been previously. So it's a lot easier for me to see it as an ultimate boon.
Okay. And then the next character that I see this for, Loghain's call to adventure or crossing the threshold. I could see either way. If this isn't his call to adventure, I would say that learning to channel the first time is. And
so just from a purely speculative standpoint, look, if without going into more detail, we have Min's foreshadowing that Loghain has a moment of glory coming ahead. So if we call that his ultimate boon, I would be more likely to classify the return of his powers as a belly or maybe a meeting with a higher power. It's regifted to him because his call, presumably from my perspective, is being incited to being a false dragon. That's what starts him down his road.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. That would be his call to adventure. But I see this as a crossing the threshold because this is going back to channeling, right? He lost it previously. So he's going back to channeling now. And we could even look to Nynaeve as a mentor for him in this, and this being the gift. And now he can channel again, and he is surrounded by Aes Sedai. So there's clearly a danger to him. And he's also entering this new world now where there's a male channeler who is the true dragon who has declared an amnesty.
Yeah, I'll give you, I'm imagining Loghain's joining of the Black Tower to be quite a rocky road, so that could very easily be a belly.
Yeah, and there's a bit of foreknowledge thrown into all of my, talking about this.
Yeah, I actually really like it as his belly of the whale. I think you chose
poorly.
I think. So often we get the crossing the threshold and the belly of the whale kind of intersected. I don't think there's much of an opportunity for him now that he's escaped and been healed for him to kind of go back to, I guess, even his pre-claiming to be the dragon reborn days, just because of who he is. Like, he's essentially one of the top five known people in the world. So I think the opportunity to not have an adventure and just to stay was to stay gentled and just, kind of stay a pawn. But with this escape, there's kind of no turning back. And I could see where later, we learn new things, Alex, that might also make a good belly of the whale. Mm-hmm. Which is why you bumped it to crossing the threshold. But I like a point for either of those.
And then I, as I'm sure everyone could already guess, the next two characters of the healing that I would like to talk about are Suwon and Leanne. And for both of them, I think that this is the same. the same thing, right? Because they're both getting their powers back. But it's difficult for me to try and place it, because I don't think it is an ultimate boon. I don't think that this.
Well, they have so much. There's so many books left to come, and I doubt they both die soon.
Yes.
Sorry, taking a guess.
Exactly. So, like, I don't see it as an ultimate boon. I think probably this is a meeting with a higher power, where they're getting
just being stilled is one of their trials, and the meeting with a higher power gifts them out of that trial. They've handled it, they've learned to settle, and now they're being brought back into the world. Maybe it's a mini refusal of the return within a shorter arc in a meeting with a higher power in their large arc.
I don't know. I don't like the refusal of the return. I like higher power. I could also see like a mentor, or I could even make an argument for Belly of the Whale, but I really feel that meeting with the higher power is the best place for that, with Nynaeve obviously being the higher power. Yeah. I really think it's interesting that that one thing could be so many different points for so many different characters. That's a really fun thing for me. And I think it emphasizes again how important that is, and how astonishing, if we didn't already know, that is that Nynaeve could do that healing.
Thank you so much for joining us. If you enjoy Hero's Journey as much as we love doing it, don't forget to leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts from. And if that place happens to be Spotify, we put up weekly polls that you can respond to. We love to get feedback from you. And we also have our Discord if you want to interact with us directly. It's a fun place to hang out, talk about books, and rant about how Min is best girl.
I expect that essay to be posted any day now, Jack. By the end of the week.
Buddy. It's mostly steamy fan fiction, but
I'm okay with that too.
I'd like to announce my resignation from the podcast.
Thank you so much for joining us one more time. As always, I have been your host and judge, Jack.
This is Alex.
And I'm Zach.
And join us next week when we'll be capping off our time with Lord of Chaos with a dive into the Lord of Chaos himself, I think, if I understood the title correctly.
Land. I don't think you did.
Yay!
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
The Aes Sedai are bad scientists, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's true. And